Venice Diary.
Hello, good evening. Welcome to Global Critics Venice Voice from the Venice Film Festival on Fred Film Radio. I'm Rita Di Santo, the host of this program, and I'm here with three brilliant colleagues from Italy.
My name is John Bleasdale. I write for The New World. Although I live in Italy now for 26 years, I'm originally from the UK.
And from the UK?
Yeah, me as well. I'm David Katz. I write for Cine Europa Film News UK. And I'm based in the UK. I'm based in London.
And from Holland, a very special guest, a very special entry.
Well, thank you. Mark van der Klaashorst, I'm editor-in-chief and head writer for the International Cinephile Society.
And global Golden Globes.
Golden Globes, yes.
Ah!
Yeah.
Okay. So, let's start with the usual look at the movie that we have seen fresh from the competition this morning. So, the first one is The Voice of Hind Rajab. It's based on a true story. Hind was a 5-year-old Palestinian girl in Gaza. On January 29, 2024, Hind was trapped in a car with other members of her family dead. And her phone call with rescue team was recorded. That audio is the heart of this film by Tunisian director Kouter Ben Hania. So the film uses Hindi's actual voice that is crying for help. It's a story of a small voice with immense power, a plea that must not be forgotten.
Yes.
Yeah, I love it.
Well, I was at the press screening at 8:30 this morning. I don't know when you guys saw it. And I've been coming to the Venice Film Festival for, I think, around about 15, 16 years. And I've never been in a press screening that has been so emotionally impactful. And the audience, who, let's face it, we're all journalists in that screening. We're all relatively objective about film. We're here to look at films, and I just heard weeping. I heard a real cathart. People didn't want to leave the cinema because they were too upset. It was a huge applause. Now, it's almost, for me, irrelevant whether this is a good film to some degree. There's an element that my ability to criticize the film as a cinematic critic is somewhat stymied just by the situation, the moment, and the fact that it obviously touched a nerve, which had very little to do with cinema. Didn't have very little to do with cinema. It is a great work, but I'm not sure if I'm almost ready to approach it with that frame of mind.
No, I think that if you look at it purely on a cinematic level, it's hard to see decoupled from the political angle that you have. But purely on a cinematic level, I thought it was a good film, but not great. And I had some problems with the final 10 minutes where we see the actual footage of the actual people that helped or tried to help Hind Rajab. And then we get into the, I don't want to get too much into spoilers here, but we get some footage of the car itself that she was trapped in. We see her mother touching her daughter's body and that sort of thing. I found that part a little bit manipulative, but like this 80 minutes or so before that, the voice is of course important, but I thought it was more a film about the four people in the Red Crescent emergency center than it was about her. If I look at purely cinematic, it's social realism and done really well. But to see it separated from the political angle and from the whole story and the whole situation in Gaza itself.
The movie is really well written because when you have a topic that is powerful, that is enough for the audience to be entertained. But I really thought the dialogues inside of the rescue, I didn't know exactly of all this bureaucracy to save somebody. I didn't know that they could go and save somebody. As you said, we don't want to make any spoils. And I have to say, I love cinema that is able to grasp the moment now, to talk about now, the immediate, what's happened now in the world. And it's very difficult for a cinema. I'm thinking about Fire at Sea, why it was important, Fire at Sea. Because it was not a movie made after 2-3 years. It was made that winter. And it was crucial for everything. We were all it was a huge campaign. So I think I can see this ability of to be able to really talk about something that's happened now.
Yes, yeah. I essentially want to kind of concur with John and Mark just about, I don't know if you'd call it resistance, but just a kind of self-consciousness about our own reaction in relation to, you know, the kind of, extraordinary response it had in the morning. And I also heard the press conference was similarly kind of emotionally charged, and I suppose it just premiered and I haven't seen the kind of response there. But I suppose, a question I had is how, you know, the two kinds of intertwined filmmaking strategies of this kind of dramatization and the kind of hard sort of documentary evidence, how well they dovetailed and how well, I suppose, if, you know, they necessarily sort of benefited from, I mean, obviously it's the kind of absolute fulcrum of the film, but just in terms of, you know, feeling whether, I suppose, how the documentary evidence seems in light of the sort of act, you know, the kind of scripted acting and the kind of intensity of the kind of peril and everything. So yeah, but beyond that, I think just the urgency of the topic and just the kind of symbolic value of Hind Rajab and that tragedy kind of pretty much supersedes these considerations, because this is, in a sense, it's just the tip of the iceberg of a kind of, you know, movement of solidarity, which this film is going to be part of as it kind of proceeds through its release.
It's really a sad movie. I mean, at the end, we all were crying. I would see, I was looking around my and I was thinking, as you said, Mark, I was thinking the same, because I was thinking maybe it's like usually when you have so much emotion in a movie, it's like you manipulate the audience. You don't have that distance. I know that there has been, we had a documentary with the same story. Maybe it's more appropriate to have a documentary to look to a drama like this with a bit of a distance, to have an objective point of view. But then I thought maybe this is what we need. Maybe we are really because I've been watching so much very sad images, photographs. The media, the television is using this Gaza story to sell more news. One news after another, one photo after another on the front page, and then you buy the newspaper. But then at the end, it's like almost an anesthetic, because then you close your newspaper and you think, okay, the drama is there and it's in the newspaper, and we are going with our daily life, happy daily life. This one is terrible, because it's like almost, it's impossible not to feel the drama, to be there. But what I felt is a movie that takes you inside of that rescue team. It takes you in the square with the girl. I wish, as you said, maybe it's too much. I wish he didn't use the voice, because it was very hard to hear the voice.
I heard a couple of people talk. I'll play devil's advocate a little bit here, because to myself and to what Mark said as well, I've heard manipulative and I've heard exploitative used by several people in terms of this film. I think we kind of have to some degree, actually question such sort of for want of a better word, sort of bourgeois notions of critique, you know, because of we're facing genocide here and we're facing acts of absolute horror. So it's like you don't want people to, how do you present an army unit killing a five-year-old girl intentionally in a way that isn't manipulative? How can you criticize a filmmaker for the unethical use of a real voice when you've done that to a girl? Surely the family should decide that. And if the family are okay with that, I don't see any problem whatsoever. And the criticism is actually addressed in the film, because there is a moment where a member of the Red Crescent, they're collecting social media videos to put online as it happens. This is the first genocide in history that has been Instagrammed. And one of them, Omar, the one of the principal helpers, the one who's the most hot-headed and is obviously playing the audience's frustration to some great degree, he says, what does it matter what you're putting on social media? They've seen so many dead babies and they still don't care. Yeah. And so I think given that we, you know, there is no news about what is happening here, we kind of need to be smashed over the head with this. Filmmakers can't afford to be subtle or, you know, you can't both sides a genocide, right? I mean, that's my pushback on that a little bit.
Yeah, but with that said, I think you're in the odd ethical situation that it's also competing here against other films to win an award, which, given the whole political charge that's on top of the film, it's a bit weird to be able to win an award on the back of this tragedy. I think it would have been better if this film had been shown here out of competition.
I think you're right in the sense that's possible. What it does, it kind of trivializes the whole festival.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And it trivializes our job, and it trivializes because it ultimately the festival is trivial. You know, the Golden Lion doesn't matter. I mean,
what?
Sofia Coppola somewhere won, for crying out loud. How serious can we be? I'm not picking on Sofia Coppola. Plenty of unworthy films have won the Golden Lion. It's not an expression of the best film. So if this one wins purely as a function of the fact that it speaks to a certain degree of emotional anger and emotional reaction, I'm fine with that. I have no problem with that whatsoever.
It would also be a great positive again, because it puts again attention on this whole issue.
It goes into the Oscar race. It goes into
exactly.
I also thought about this is a wait a moment, because I was like you. My reaction as a critic was like, no, this is populism. This is not. And then I felt, I started to look at the movie in a different way, and I really felt this movie is like breaking the boundaries. It's something completely new to come into the present. But also, I said to myself, this is a Tunisian director. We are very used to read the way North Europe, American director see the reality and look at the reality. European. I have to say, once I was in Algeria, I was in America, and I had a chat with an Algerian director, and we were talking about this comedy, and then I was like, I love your comedy, but it's so slow. Why the people there, they walk so slow in your movie? And he said to me, because in Algeria it's very hot, we can't walk fast. And then I said, oh my God, I mean, in London we run in the underground all the time. So I'm thinking also maybe we need to allow these people to tell their story from their own place, with their own background, their own culture, their own way of telling story. I know that John has a good experience, also David, of Middle East cinema, contemporary Middle East cinema. Yes. I think, what do you think of this as well, this side?
Absolutely. It's funny that this festival, we have a film called The Wizard of the Kremlin, which is directed by a Frenchman, written by a Frenchman, based on a novel by an Italian, acted by a Swedish actress and an American actor, and is all about Russia. And it's just like, oh, for crying out loud. I mean, ask a Russian, you know? So I think, yeah, asking people from the region, at least, to make films about their region. I know that Tunisia obviously is, you know, it's part of MENA, so it's part of the Middle East, North Africa. So it's closer to, there have been some wonderful Palestinian films, including Ground Zero, the collection of sort of short documentaries and short films that came from Palestinian filmmakers inside Gaza, which showed last year. So yes, I think we have to find voices that are not Western and not based on our sort of our point of view, and have it come from these people. I did think there was sort of certain moments where I was thinking, oh, that's a bit melodramatic and that's a bit, you know, throwing the thing against the wall and everything. But then, you know, melodrama is also a valid language of cinema. We see that in other reenactments.
Yeah, I would say for most of the film, for me, the film was pretty honest. Except for those last moments in the film, I thought it was a good film.
Anyway, the jury will have a very hard...
out of interest, I have a question if any of you know this. Do you know where it was actually filmed, The Voice of Hin Rajab? Do you know which country?
Oh, the actual...
Where principal photography took place, because, I mean, it's largely Palestinian cast, but obviously Tunisian writer-director and French funding, but it made me wonder, and obviously with this question of mediation and the remove of it being that, you know, it's taking place in Ramallah, about somewhere, you know, across Israel's landmass, you know, gave it also just kind of sort of absorb that sense of the distance with... distances within the distance. So I think this won't be the last kind of divisive conversation about this film, by no means.
I think it's kind of, I think probably 90% is in the studio, because
it would just be interesting to me which country beyond wherever the soundstage. I mean, that has implications, whether
space. It's not that we have two, but we have other movies. This is what will happen, that we will talk all the festival about this movie and we will forget about the other. Yeah. So we have another movie by a great director, probably John, you know very well, Duse, but you know the director, yeah?
Yes, of course, yeah.
He lives near where you live, or no, in the north of Italy somewhere? Or
in the northeast.
Pedro Marcello is not from that, because he has always some from the north of Italy.
Right, yeah, maybe. No,
I think Marcello might be from the south, actually.
A movie about the Po? On the set on the bar.
So,
anyway, this movie is called Duse, and it follows the story of a very famous Italian stage actress, Eleonora Duse. It's the story of her artistic comeback against the backdrop of the historic period. That was during the fascism, we have also a bit of a love story with D'Annunzio.
Yeah, I was the only one, I think, who saw the film, except for you, of course. I think a friend of mine after the film put it succinctly when he said, there was so much ham surf that I don't even have to have lunch anymore. And I think that's very true. It was a super melodramatic film with acting in capitals. It's beautiful to look at, but not a film for me.
I don't know, Valeria Bruni Tedeschi, she's a good actress.
Absolutely.
I don't know, but also Duse was a kind of actress, very that she belonged to the past. It was almost a legend, and I don't know, a phrase... It doesn't look similar to the Duse, and she make a great effort to play the role, but also I don't know, I didn't feel that D'Annunzio is an important writer for that period in history, and with a bit of dialogue change the situation, the point of view of the changes is a political opinion in just one dialogue, I think that is a bit fast and not very believable. And also Duse was an incredible artist. It was not only she was important for cinema, and it's not in this movie at all. She became popular because of the cinema that we see, the funeral, and there are so many Italians are there. But she was not well known. Yes, she was known for theater, but she was the first actress to well known to everybody, to the people, because she was doing also cinema. And this is not in the movies. We have this huge funeral, and we don't know why she was so popular. For somebody that didn't know Duse, it's a bit, clear.
Do you think there'll be a possibility of a prize for Valeria Bruni Tedeschi?
No.
No?
I don't think so.
I mean, traditionally, the jury has to give one prize to an Italian. It's not a...
What do you think?
Yeah, that would be the easiest way to award Italy in this sense.
Unless you get Gianfranco Rosi for...
I don't know with this jury, especially with Alexander Payne as the president, if that is the kind of film that will win an award. But
We have lots of good actresses as well in the next few days from Asia. I don't want to say, but yeah.
But watching the film, I didn't really learn a lot about this woman, other than that she was terribly naive. She let herself be used by Mussolini and the fascists in their rise to the top. But other than that, I didn't really learn a lot about her. And of course, going in, I didn't know anything about her. So, yeah, I don't think the film, I don't know what the film was trying to say.
Okay, we are very close to the end. We have a game at the end of our program. David is familiar with that. It's a thumbs up or thumbs down for the voice of thumbs up or thumbs down?
Thumbs up.
Thumbs up.
Wow,
certainly.
For
without
thumbs up. And for Duse, you have...
Duse is
neutral, no comment.
Now, that would be another film. That's
but I like his previous films quite a lot, so he gets a kind of reputational thumbs up, you could say.
Okay.
Thumbs down, Duse.
Okay, we have few movies left from previous episode. So one is No Other Choice. Thumbs up, thumbs down.
Oh, thumbs up, definitely.
Thumbs down.
This is wonderful. This is what I like. When we start to argue, come on. Yeah. Okay, I have another title.
This is like Fred's version of Fresh or Rotten,
I have another title. La Grazia. Thumbs up, thumbs down.
Thumbs up.
Woo, three thumbs up, one thumbs
down. I didn't see it.
So thank you so much. I hope you can come back so we can talk more about No Other Choice. We have a few days left, and now it's time for a lovely Campari Aperol Spritz. John, what's your choice? Aperol Campari Spritz. Which is your favorite?
I don't drink.
That's amazing.
I have a fizzy water.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And have a wonderful evening, and see you tomorrow.
Fred, 24/7 on Fred FM and smartphone app.